Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Today we have with us the effervescent Tyler Campbell. Hello, Tyler.
Jen, effervescent. I don't even know how to pronounce that. That is amazing. I don't know what it means, but I love it.
Shine. You just shine.
I love it.
What precedes you is just light.
I'm receiving it, honey. It's great to be with you, Jen. It is great.
Thank you for joining us. Many of you may know Tyler from his football days, or Tyler from his work with the National MS Society and a myriad of other things. But Tyler was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis while playing football for San Diego State University. But that was not the end of the football. That was the beginning of life. It's almost like you were reborn.
Love it, Jen. And I couldn't have said it, you know, better myself. And that's life for everybody, right? I think we, you know, you come in and there are things that you're looking to accomplish. You feel like you're finally on that right road of being who you feel like you're supposed to be. Or for somebody, maybe they feel family pressure because family or other people have an idea of who they're supposed to be. And then you get put down this road and this road. And then life has a way of saying, wait, hold on. that's not what you're intended to be. And for some, it is a tough pill to swallow. You've worked so hard to be something or to do something, and then for it to just be stalemated or taken away from you. Like, Jen, that's a lot, right? It hurts. It's painful. And then you have to, what do you quote unquote, reinvent yourself to do something new, like starting all over? I've been doing this for all my life, and now I have to find something new? Oh, it's like you hit a midlife crisis earlier than you're supposed to hit the midlife crisis type of deal. You know what I mean? And so I just want people to know, like, Jen, I've been there. I understand that feeling. I know what that's like. And hopefully today we can help people not feel as alone.
I know
somebody's going through that. And not to mention, Jen, hello, we're coming out of a pandemic. So probably a lot of people, MS or not, are thrown into that category as well, who listen to your show, you know?
Absolutely. I love that. And I think with multiple sclerosis, I know with myself, as the disease progresses, we are constantly having to reinvent ourselves and grieve losses, and some greater than others. But yes. I can only imagine at your diagnosis, how that shifted you. What happened and what led to that diagnosis?
I'll say this even before, to let people know, like, get a, you know, I like to say, give people a window seat into your heart of what you're actually feeling. I think that's important. For me, before getting diagnosed, Jen, I know that even while I was in college, I think before that, when I was in high school, like my latter years, my junior year and senior year of high school, I graduated a year early because I started, not a year early, but I was young for my grade. I graduated high school when I was 17 because I had started school early. My mom had figured out that I could go to a crosstown school when I was, they would accept kindergartners at the age of 4. And I think she was tired of me being home, daycare. So she sent me there. So I was young when I graduated, but I do know my senior year in high school, I was very lethargic. nothing showed up on my physicals. I was very healthy, but I was very lethargic. And it's like, you know, I'm looking around like, why am I more tired than everybody else? Like often, you know, not just in sports, but even in like class, you know, and then as I got to college, it stayed with me, like constant fatigue. Like just always. And what I did was I interpreted it as me not working hard enough. And I know that somebody's going through that with MS, or you are newly diagnosed, or you're going through it and your body is changing. And for some reason you think that there is like something is incredibly wrong. Like you're not enough. So it already created this mindset of me not valuing me, and I am not enough. So what I did was I actually overworked myself, Jen. As opposed to other football athletes on my teams, all those years in college, because I went 3 years of college football before getting diagnosed, right? My junior year. And I was known for being a hard worker. I was known for being first one in last one to leave. And I would do two-a-days. I'd work out twice a day. And people would be like, oh, man, he's such a hard worker. And I was a hard worker. But, Jen, the reason I worked so hard was literally because I was always fatigued. And I used to always continue to look around like, why isn't anybody else tired like I am? I'm so tired. I'm working. I'm in shape. I'm working out 2 times a day, but I'm still tired. What's going on? And so when I got diagnosed, finally after that junior year of my junior football season of playing BYU in our last game of the season, there was almost a kind of like a sense of relief in that moment, because all from 17 all the way to 21. So that's 4 years of my life struggling with fatigue, and I finally kind of got an answer, you know?
I can imagine that the inner dialogue going on and the pain within that you had to keep to yourself.
Yes, yes. And I play this masculine sport of football, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's you're a 49ers fan, so it's like, you know, rub some dirt on it. You know, do not complain. The machismo, I'm in the wrong sport to have a vulnerable heart. You know, that moment as a young man when you feel like you should open up, it's the wrong sport, because there's not really a space for that. that's not really a space for that. You know that, Jen. You're not looking for Jimmy Garoppolo to tell you he doesn't want to play because he's feeling a little tired. As a 49ers fan, you don't want to hear that.
I get that very well. Great analogy. You know me better than
anything. Yeah, so that's where I am. And it didn't mean anything bad upon people. It was the wrong space. But I was relieved when my neurologist gave me the spinal tap, went for the MRI, that there were lesions, that the spinal tap was positive for MS. By the way, I was very quickly diagnosed, because those who listen in know that it could take years.
Absolutely.
Again, decades. There's a time frame of MS patients who are listening into this. And even when they had the diagnosis, there was no form of therapy for them. Or again, they've been misdiagnosed for so long. They just put it to the side and were just like, I just have to deal with this, because I'm tired of being a guinea pig. Tired. So I was blessed because I got diagnosed when I finally got to a neurologist, you know.
And to what do you credit? Do you credit that to the resources you had and or to your advocation of just needing help? I mean, what do you, is it a conflation of both? Or?
So I will say this. I was blessed in an environment because football had a team doctor. Okay. When I went through evaluations from our trainers, and my motor functioning was so off, my right side of my body was paralysis and the slurred speech and equilibrium issues, that when they saw me, it was like, you need to go to the team doctor in the next room. So everything was close. You know, you're in the locker room, the training room is there. So I was blessed to have facilities, because it is not always that case. I didn't have to set forth an initial doctor's appointment first before I got to my neurologist. I actually saw one for free because I was a scholarship athlete, and that doctor made an appointment to go see a neurologist. I had no idea what a neurologist was. But when I got there and I saw the human brain diagrams, when I saw an elderly white woman who sat next to me, I'll never forget it. And she told me, she said, "Son, what are you doing here?" She said, "You're too young and you're too in shape to be here." That was my first inclination. Like, okay, this is a little serious. I was away from home. My parents were back in Texas. I'm in San Diego, California for school. I don't have any family members, friends present. The doctor at the team just booked the appointment. I had to drive with my left foot and my left hand to La Jolla Scripps Memorial Hospital. And I got my diagnosis alone. And so for somebody out there, I just want them to know, like, I know what it's like to have to go and fight this fight, you know, by yourself. And I empathize with you. My heart goes out to you. I know what that is like. And then I know the back end of that, which we'll discuss more, Jen, I know we will, which is, you know, you have this MS diagnosis and now you've never heard of it, but now you have to explain it. Or now you have to be the person to all of a sudden stand up and have a voice when you're having to explain to important people in your life what it is that you're going through, because you need them to understand, because you're not that same person and you're dealing with a lot. And it's just so much at one time when you're trying to get your diagnosis. Like, I empathize with you and I just understand, because I was 21 years old as a college student, and that, you know, that's what I was going through.
I picture that 21-year-old sitting alone with that diagnosis, and I want to hug him. I just want to embrace
him. Me too. Me too, Jane.
I can't imagine. That first phone call, I imagine, was to your folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So the neurologist, after the spinal tap, by the way, she said, "Oh, this isn't going to hurt at all." You know,
he's never had one.
Listen, this is us patient experience, right? I get in the fetal position. Oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? What is about to take place? And they pull out the needle and the pressure, and they're feeling on your lumbar, and there's a potential for spinal leaks. What is a spinal? What are we talking about here? Yeah, if there's a spinal leak, just come back and do a blood patch. You'll know it's a spinal leak because you're going to have constant headaches that are very, what? So all of that. And so I get the diagnosis. I spent the whole day at the hospital. Awaiting the spinal tap results, because she knew I needed them immediately because I was a college student. And then she sent me to an MRI facility off campus, still driving with my left hand, still driving with my foot. And then I got the results back from them. I had to go back to Scripps La Jolla Hospital the next day to go over my results, right? And I still have paralysis, you know, all the slurred speech, all that stuff. So definitely not healthy, not a way to do it. But again, I was to myself. The trainers had, and the doctors, everything was up to me now. It was on Tyler to do all of this. So I go back, I get the diagnosis. She tells me immediately, "Call your mother or your father or your caretaker." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So this is, she's like, "You have this disease called multiple sclerosis," which was my guess the whole time. And I was right. And she was like, "I'm so thankful." And she said it. She said, "It doesn't always happen this quickly." Right. And so that was the man of God's grace over me. I called my mom. My mom is a former nurse. So she has a nursing background. Okay. And so when I said MS, my mom knew what that was. So lucky. And my mom just turned around. She said, "Okay, Tyler, listen to everything that this woman is telling you to do. Don't ask questions. Listen to everything and follow her directions. And we will talk later when you get home." Because
God bless her.
My mom was like, "This is very serious and this is nothing to play with."
Very sound advice and so present for.
I got lucky, Jen. What are the odds that, you know, up until this point, you even forget that your mother was once a nurse and that my mom was constantly still taking the test to stay, to keep her, whatever you need to make sure that you're a licensed, you know, your ability to nurse. My mom still takes the test even to this day. So that's my diagnosis. That's how that happened. Now, I'd be lying to you if I told you, Jen, that I understood the magnitude of what was taking place. I still did not.
Had you heard of multiple sclerosis or
anything? Not a clue. As an African-American male, and this is, I want to give everybody a window seat into that type of household. You are very much aware of sickle cell anemia, cancer, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes. Diabetes. Those were the five that you are I was cultured on and always have the warning signs of. Very, very early. I started battling hypertension in the best shape of my life, hereditary wise, while I was in college. And I was in the best shape of my life, just hereditary, just family dynamics. So when this thing came up, it's like, what is this? That's not even in our wheelhouse. Because of that, I didn't take it as seriously, Jen. It was more so a checklist. Okay, what do I need to do? Do we have medicine for this? I have finals coming up. A college student, I just want to be honest, guys. Like, I have finals. I'm on a scholarship. I don't want my scholarship taken away. I have a blessing to have my education paid for, y'all. Paid for. And I get to play a sport that I love. I can't let this MS thing to take that away. I promised my mother and my father a college degree in business management from San Diego State University. Those are the things. So my ask immediately, Jen, to the doctor was, can I still play football?
Of course it was.
Out of all the stuff that I asked, can I still play football? And her response was, I've never seen anybody so fit. I've never had an African-American male patient.
That speaks volumes.
And at that time, so this is 2007. And so all of those things. So for her, I was also an intriguing case, is what I also learned. For me, I knew I also needed to play ball in that moment, not just for me, but for somebody else who has my disease. So it became very visual and apparent at that moment that by me being able to continue was not only going to be for me, it was going to be for somebody else who had, because what I had and the way that I came into this office was obviously something that had never been seen before. Cause I'm 220 something pounds. I'm 6 foot. I'm power cleaning right at 400 pounds. I'm bench pressing well over 300. I squat over 600 pounds. So it didn't fit and I played this full contact sport of football. It was a total anomaly for her at that time. And so she said, yes, but if you have a relapse with the disease, we'll be having to take the game of football away from you because there's potential that it will be so progressive in you that you will live a life in a wheelchair. I'm 21 years old. I was like, cool. Because think of yourself in okay, you have a one-track mind. You have this thing that you love. You have this thing that you do. And you just want to keep doing that thing. Please step into the mind of your 21-year-old self.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. And so my reply was, do we have medication for this? What does that do? She started me out on steroids. And I told her no, because I get drug tested by the NCAA. And she was like, it's not those types of steroids, but we have to start at the bare minimum to see how your body responds. And that's kind of how I got ushered into the guinea pig process also of medications, the steroid portion. Okay, steroids only work for this amount of time. So we have to get, we got to start thinking of the actual therapies and the medications. And then the research of medications. What is PML? Oh my God, what? No, okay, nothing with PML. We're not gonna do any of that stuff. Let's start on the bare minimum. And so I started with needle, the injection therapies. And I would wait till all of my friends left the locker room and I would give my injections when nobody was present. A lot of stuff just going on in my life that I did not know how to, or didn't know the space to educate people. I didn't want you to feel bad for me. A lot of that stuff, I just did not know how to navigate at that time, was the world that I began to get ushered into in the aftermath of getting diagnosed with MS.
Also, at that stage in your life, with football being literally your pathway to your education,
yes, and ma'am,
your lifeline at that point, you were fearful of losing that. And at that point, you did anything it took to be able to keep that intact.
Yes, because people lose scholarships. Just because you have a scholarship doesn't mean you get to, it's always going to be there. That's like the business of college athletics. You know what I mean? So, you know, that I was so fearful of that. I knew it was such a grand opportunity to be attending an institution to get a business management degree. That mattered. That meant the world. It was a promise I made to my family. It's a promise I made to myself. And football was the pathway that allowed me to get there. And not to mention, I signed a contract. It was my first business introduction to understand that me putting my name on the dotted line for something meant it was bigger than me. I made a commitment to my teammates to be the best possible teammate and to put in blood and to put up sweat and tears together for the betterment of a team. I signed a contract for that. And I wanted to honor that. I was always taught, you know, your word on something means everything. And you do what you can to follow through with that word. And so those are the things that fell through my mind. I'd be lying if I told you that I researched MS and everything about it. I did the bare minimum to not get scared to say in my life, like, okay, I got to do this. And I'll figure out a way to do it. And I won't make myself be a problem. I'm not going to talk to anybody about it. I'm not going to tell. I didn't tell my coaches about it. I never had a conversation with my coaches about what I was going through. Those are Achilles heels. If I could go back again, Jen, for where I really put it, added stress and weight over myself that did not have to be there. You know, I didn't reach out. I didn't learn about organizations like MSAA. I didn't learn about organizations like the Society or Can Do MS, all these platforms that are available for people. I researched Montel Williams. When I did Google MS, I kept seeing images of faces of people who did not look like me, which made me even more scared and made me more introverted, because the faces in 2007 that I saw, they were Caucasian. They were majority female, some male. They didn't look like me.
And at that, imagine that fear, and it speaks to a lot of the inequities we face today, and what we need to do to educate our society on who needs to be included, not only in education but clinical trials, and make sure that there's equal representation. Because I can't imagine that fear.
Yeah, it further introverted me. It further made me feel as if it's the random, but there was also this other side of me that said, why not me? Which was intriguing. And I think that's the athlete side of it. It is the turn a negative into a positive. It is the things that were instilled in me by my parents. It is the underdog story that we always love in sports, right? Those are the other things that came. It was just the love for life. And knowing that we all have something, and okay, Tyler, your MS is your something. And so when I knew that I could never meet Montel Williams, I said, okay, Tyler, make yourself visible is the hope with what you have with the disease. If you can do this, somebody will find your story one day and they'll say, hey, he did that. So what can I do?
Well, and in 2009, you did have that relapse.
Yeah.
And you did get sidelined permanently.
Yeah. And that's where it led. You know, it ended up taking the game away from me. I was working out for NFL scouts. And the next thing you know, like the doctor said, you have one more relapse. Hey, that's it. And I had that. And I think by that time, having gone through so many ups and downs and living with MS and a life of with MS, there was also peace for me. Because I told you I had fulfilled and shown that it could be done. That if somebody wanted to do that, you can do that. It's very much possible. And I ran my race with it, and I got my degree.
Congratulations. So,
you know, it wasn't as if I didn't fulfill what I wanted to fulfill. So there were things that were done. It just, the football part of it stopped. By the way, yes, you can get a college degree with MS. How about that? You know, how about that? And you can find student services and the disability services of ways around campus that could help you navigate and tutoring services that are allotted to you. If you do just speak up and let teachers know and the school system know, I have MS.
I love to say that because it's when we release ourselves from our fears,
yes,
we liberate others to do the same. And we also receive the resources that are available. And the fear begins to turn, at least for me, into a motivation to find a greater purpose. And I always, whenever I was reading about you, I read that you said, when one door closes, another opens.
Yeah.
And I view my diagnosis as an opportunity to help others. And I love that.
I said those words. Hear me out. I said those words, y'all. I did not know that that was what I was going to tell the doctor when he took football. Those words came right after the neurologist came in and said, you can't play anymore. You can't play anymore. There's a woman by the name of Mary B, who I started my philanthropic work with when I was in San Diego. And she was the only adult that I had in the room with me at that time. Remember, I'm a college student and I'm back at Scripps LaJoie Memorial Hospital. By this time I'm checked in. I have a room, you know, I cannot function, you know, on my own. And she was there. She could attest to it. And the words came. It wasn't a thought. They just came. And when I spoke them, it was the moment that I knew that somehow, some way, it's going to be okay. It's not going to be pretty. It is going to be very painful, but it's ultimately going to be okay. I'm going to find my way. And that's when I knew I had done enough with MS to give somebody else hope. And if you're giving somebody, like, hope is everything. Everything starts with hope. If you have a sickness, if you are struggling within your family, if you're struggling to communicate with your children, if marriage is on the rocks, if life just isn't going the way that you, the first thing that we lean on as people is we hope that things will get better. And that's what I had. I had hope. I clung to hope. I didn't know everything. I didn't know how it was going to work out. If it was going to work out, I could have hope, and hope was free, you know, and that's what I hoped in that moment. And those were the words. And then I understood that my life was about to go on a different trajectory because of MS, and that things in my life were really about to change in a way that I never fathomed them to. I didn't think it was going to be where we are now, but I knew that things were changing, and that football was definitely going to be in the rearview mirror.
But that energy, that passion, that drive, that who you are, your essence.
Yes, ma'am.
Everything that you did put into football, you have that. That is still who you are, and you shine so brightly. And I see that. And I am constantly inspired by what I hear and what I see, because it's not so much in the words, it's in the way you say them.
Yeah.
It's in the belief in yourself and in others. And I'd like to speak to that person listening today,
yeah,
who perhaps, unlike you and I, are without that support system, who's diagnosed or who has been diagnosed and feeling pretty unsupported and alone. What would you like to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, it's okay to feel the way that you feel. And give yourself some grace. And you weren't diagnosed because you're a bad person, or because things went on earlier in your life and you started to nitpick and say, man, I did this the wrong way, or I treated that person the wrong way. That's not it. Life happens. And it's not fair, and it's not right, you know. And I'm not gonna be, hey, MS sucks, Jen. Can I say that? Is that okay to say?
MS sucks.
Here's the deal. My reasoning for blessing, which I don't want it to get confused. I want to clear that up too, because it's a blessing for me because I'm with what I've been gifted with. It was given a platform because of MS. I was not always a speaker, Jen. I was very introverted by nature, very introverted person. And I took a speech class the same year that I was diagnosed, or the semester after I was diagnosed. And I put it off to my senior year in college. I was a senior in college taking freshman speech. And when I took the class, I learned that I actually loved words and I enjoyed conversating and telling a story a little bit more than I did scoring a touchdown.
You know, that wasn't an accident, right?
I know.
That was divine, if ever I hear divine.
I know it. And that's the crazy thing. So life had hinted to me that there was something a little bit more enjoyable than this thing that you've been doing all your life. And so I want to tell somebody, you know, sometimes you have to find a new approach to your old dream. And I've said that before. MS took away what I thought was the ultimate. And my dream was always to help and serve other people. I thought that that was done through having people cheer for you in the stands because you make an amazing block or tackle or score a touchdown. That's how you impact people. But in all actuality, words have a more eloquent and more profound registry to somebody's heart than a game, believe it or not. And it's a lot less painful. So I tell people, your dreams don't have to die first and foremost with this disease. You just have to, you're going to have to tweak some things. You're probably going to have to say no to a lot of things. It may even take you a little bit longer to do certain things. But they don't have to. They don't have to die. The beautiful thing about technology and what the pandemic has shown us now is that with this computer and with the technology, you are so much better off than our friends who had MS in the 80s, in the 70s, in the 90s, even the early 2000s when I was diagnosed. There are so many medication choices, y'all. And that is your blessing, is that you actually have options. There's a generation of MS patients who were before us who just didn't have options. So that's your blessing. Number two is the organizations that are out there, and they are tremendous, y'all, at your fingertips. Don't just go to Dr. Google. Dr. Google will scare you. He scared me.
He scared me.
I know he scares everybody. Dr. Google will scare you. But there are some organizations that have a great bevy of knowledge. And then from there, there are support groups. Virtual support groups by these organizations, the society, you can pinpoint and find locations of where you are or even wherever across the country. And you can join these meetings virtually. They have access to them virtually, regionally. Or there's even places if you want to go in person to get around people who understand what it's like when you say, I'm so tired and I don't know why. I'm having brain fog and memory issues. My pain level is at 11 right now. It is so hard to grip a pencil. I'm having tingles. I've progressed so much that it is so incredibly hard to stand up, and it's taken so much from me. I was walking a couple of weeks ago. Things have progressed so fast. I'm in a wheelchair now, Tyler. Those conversations, because we have to open up our hearts. We have to find our release. You've got to get around people first and foremost, new to the disease, that understand what it is that you're talking about.
It's a scary place. It's scary.
And it's a new language, especially for people. God bless them. They love you. They want to be there for you, but they don't necessarily know how, and they can't understand what you feel. And it's not their fault. It's not their fault. They love you. And that's why you have to fulfill that void to get around people who do understand this MS walk. And can help navigate and be a shoulder for you to lean on, because you're going to need a shoulder to lean on, y'all.
I'm glad you brought that up, because so often those closest in our lives love us dearly. They're scared, too.
Yes.
They don't know what to do. And I think to give them the grace as well, to have that space to be fearful and take care of ourselves, but also supply them with educational resources from the National MS Society or Can-Do MS. My first call was to the National MS Society.
Yep.
And it saved me because every year since I have done Walk MS. And when I could no longer walk the course, I just volunteered and sat.
That's
and
it.
Fundraised because there is always something we can do. And it's about just redefining what that is at the moment. But back to support, the National MS Society has been a tremendous resource.
And there's a reason why they've been around for so long, right? Cindy Z is amazing. Love her to death. Think she's fantastic. I remember, you know, and then here's the credit, right? Here's the credit. A lot of the walk that I walked, a lot of the things that I learned, this big deal of playing football with MS, this new avenue, which was opened up to my life that I did not see, y'all, was simply because I started opening up about my life with MS a little bit. And the MS Society, they found me. And it just so happened that when I got back and got my feet settled and got married by the grace of the man up above, yes, it is possible to get married with MS. Fellas, yes, it is possible to get married with erectile dysfunction issues with MS.
It is, and today is my 24th wedding anniversary. So,
those are also the stories possible. I want people to know, right? That are newly diagnosed. It's not, and it takes a special person on the other side of that. But don't worry, the person you want to marry is somebody who sees you for you anyway. Sees you for all of you, the good and the bad. But the MS Society, they found me, and I gave that speech at the in Dallas-Fort Worth, nearby the airport, for the national conference. And it created a new circle for me. It created a circle of friendship for me that extended beyond football or alumni. It opened my eyes up, and it gave me a release. And it gave speaking the floor to let me know that was my gift. And so here's how you set yourself free with MS. You know, you really do reflection on yourself and what is your gift? What is your purpose? What is your mission in life? Has anybody ever sat down and talked to you and asked you about those things? Have you asked yourself those things? Like literally, what is your gift? What are you gifted at? And what is your mission? Your gift, I define it as that thing that you can be consistent at, even if nobody puts money in your pocket or ever tells you good job or keep up the good work. Like you love doing this thing so much, it brings you so much joy for yourself. Even if nobody ever saw you doing it, you could still approach it the same way. That's your gift. And then I tell people your purpose. Your purpose is your calling on your heart. And it's usually done out of a level of love, and your purpose helps other people. Right? Your purpose isn't about you. It's something that you use your gift for that helps other people. Right? And so I tell people all the time, the reason why we see famous people getting into so much trouble, the actors, the musicians, the all these famous people who have an amazing gift, right? Well, I was like, man, why is this dude going to rehab? Why is he in trouble? Why are they doing this? It's because they got the gift, but they haven't found or figured out the purpose. You've got the gift, this amazing gift to write, draw, speak, talk, run fast, jump high, you're eloquent, a gift. But if you haven't found a way to leverage that gift to help somebody else, then there's always going to be a circle of unfulfillment and unhappiness in your life. There's never going to be enough. All right. So the gift and the purpose, and those things are free. Again, I'm talking about free things for everybody, and we all have them. So when your MS comes into your life, it's even more essential that you focus on you. Me, myself, and I. And it is okay to be selfish with this thing, y'all. I'm telling y'all.
Oh, yeah.
It is so okay to be selfish.
Required. It's a requirement.
Please say that, Jen. It's required that you be selfish with you for your betterment, your health. We don't have a full arsenal of health like our companions do. We have brain fog, we have memory issues, we have physical, we have drop foot, we have constant pain, we have optic neuritis. Y'all, the list goes on and on and on. We've got a lot of garbage we travel with, okay? So it is important that you give yourself the love, the attention, to discover what makes you tick, what makes you happy, and what gives you peace. And you know what? You make room for doing that every day. And then figure out how that peace or that love for what you do helps somebody else. Because in doing so, you'll find it. Speaking was that thing for me in college. And guess what? Speaking made room for me. And it doesn't require a lot of physical on me. It doesn't require a lot of pounding physically like football did. My body does not hurt after I speak, Jen. I can do it more often. It's more sensitive to my MS needs for what Tyler needs and what Tyler is allotted to do, because I don't have a full arsenal. I do suffer from memory issues. I do have constant fatigue issues. I have erectile dysfunction issues. I have all this other garbage of MS stuff. But speaking will always be that one thing that brings a smile to my face.
And to mine as well.
And guess what, Jen? MS will take away the muscular functions. Maybe one day it'll take away a lot of other things. But just moving my lips, I think I got a good chance to make that last a good amount of time.
I agree with you. You speak to many things that mm-hmm. affect us on a daily level, physical, mental. Yeah. How do you navigate those? It's really important to our listeners that mm-hmm. they know we go through real issues, real things. Marriage is, mm-hmm. I've been married a long time. You redefine intimacy.
Yes.
It's not what it is in the fairy tales. You have to create your own.
It's constant work, Jen. You're right. I like you said, giving yourself grace. And knowing that it takes time, y'all. I've been living with MS since 2007. So 2007. So it's taken me a bevy of time. And guess what? I've had to have help. You know, I see a therapist every Saturday at 3 o'clock because I have support group. I need actual a constant level of accountability and help to navigate my life. I have memory issues, Jen. I have brain fog like you wouldn't believe. But for some reason, I can get on stage and it makes no sense. But I have to have help, guys. And I feel like that's where the disease really humbled me. From the machismo, playing masculine sport, going against the grain of being a Black male and we don't get things off of our chest. We don't go to the doctor. It changed me to know that the exact opposite of those things are good things. You know, going to the doctor, and if something does not feel good, you are even more of a woman or a man because you get up and you say, you know what? Something's not right today. I need to go see somebody. Mentally, in my community, mental health or brain health, however you want to classify it, is always downgraded when people say anxiety or depression or outcry for help, and people are looked at as if get it together, rub some dirt on it. It can't be that bad. Having somebody who's always there—that's the other thing that I was just gonna say—is no shame. You're even better because of it, especially with insurance companies being more understanding of the need since COVID has hit us. There's more of an understanding and breaks with co-pays now with going to go see a therapist. So if for you personally, you've wanted to go see somebody, but the cost has not been right, it's crazy. Now is the time better than any to actually go and look up who is allotted by your insurance company, because co-pays have had breaks in them because people have been traumatized by COVID. We all have. We've loved and we've lost during COVID. And so think of that and use that too. If you can't get to the support group, if you can't find somebody, you don't have a person to talk to, see that therapist. And also it will strengthen you because MS was just an added byproduct onto us of things that we haven't sorted out even from our own adolescence. That's what I learned. MS was just something else on top, but there are some things that Tyler didn't work through when he was 12, when he was 13, when he was all the way through. Not to say that my childhood was bad or my parents did anything wrong. No. There are things that added baggage that Tyler put on himself that he hasn't released. So if we got MS coming into our lives, that means that if you're in your 30s, if you're in your 40s, even if you're in your teens, there are some things in your back years that you haven't let go of or haven't processed through. And it's just getting stacked on top of the MS thing. So you got the weight of the world on your shoulders outside of MS. So what we got to do is we got to break that stuff up. The adolescent problems, the marriage problems, the childhood traumatization problems, job issues, other experiences. We still have to deal with those things to make room for us to be able to handle the MS things.
And sometimes MS can be a catalyst to those things emerging as well.
Yes. Yes, it can.
And I have found I too see a therapist, and mm-hmm. I am proud to say that I have had mental health issues, yes, and I am getting them addressed. And what that makes me is brave, and what that makes me is accountable, and that makes me a fighter.
Yes, it does.
And to anyone else who has mental health problems, I say problems being because MS is a problem and it, yes, affects your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
If you need help and you seek it, you're beautiful because you're taking care of you. And that makes you extraordinary. And unfortunately, the stigma surrounding mental health has really created problems for people such as yourself, a Black male, to seek that help. Well, congratulations, because you took care of yourself, and in doing so, those around you.
You too, Jen. You too. And that's what you, for anybody bold enough to make that leap, I promise you what you'll find and what I found, Jen, you can say this and comment on this as well. What I found when I say that I go see, I found out that people are more intrigued and that people want to go do the same exact thing, but they haven't met somebody who's doing it. And so you will be the vessel, watch this, to actually help somebody else that you don't even know. And they're actually closer to you in your own inner circle than you think. They just never brought up the conversation. That's the crazy. That's what's really going to get you. So when you recognize that, hey, I need to address some things. I need some help. I need somebody I can go speak to without judgment. Okay. That ain't going to have that pause. We need to work through some things. And then when you start talking about that, you're going to be like, this person, that person who never brought it up in all your 20 years of being a friend, 30 years, whatever, never brought it up. And when you say it, they're going to be like, can I get that person's contact?
No. And I see that as the greatest gifts. You are so right.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest gifts to be able to grant people permission, because everybody deserves the right to be okay. And this disease throws a wrench in the okay. And that is okay. I have bad days. I have days when I wear pajamas.
Say that, Jen.
I have days when I can't get out of bed, or I'm in the middle of talking at work and that sentence just left. I hope it comes back. It's out there. It's like gonna be out there for a while.
Yeah.
So it happens. It's our anniversary and we're arguing, but we're cool. We're cool. On track. He's making me chicken soup. He loves me. But it's in the it's not in what you read about. It's looking between the lines in this disease.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah. That's what it is. And that's what you have to do. You have to look between the lines, because on the surface, there's so much negative, and it's easy because, like I said, it hurts. It's painful. It takes things away. Y'all, it's broken relationships. Jen, it's broken marriages. Okay. It's taking jobs away from people. it's disconnected them from their families. There are a lot of different things, but there are some between the line things. And that's what you have to search for. That's what you have to kind of navigate through. And that's why we're talking about what we're talking about today, because these are the outside things that people normally don't talk about that will help somebody be able to navigate in between the lines to help them ultimately be able to. When you go through therapy, you learn. I learned how to have some upfront conversation with my neurologist about not beating around the bush no more. I learned like I go into my doctor's appointments, y'all, and I got a list for me and Dr. Edward Fox to already go through. And you'll find out that your neurologist probably is even more intrigued because you're going to give them exactly what you're feeling and what you're going through. They're not waiting. They're not wishing. They're not shooting shots in the dark as to what you possibly could be feeling because you've already opened up that door and your heart is free. So you're able to be vulnerable to somebody who has the capability to help you. And if you don't have those upfront conversations, those direct conversations, you can't be that way with your neurologist. You may need to find a neurologist. That was the thing that therapy also taught me, was like, I was in the right place with the neurologist that I have, because I can be me and what I'm feeling and what I'm going through and not have to downplay.
And that's so important because anything. Our neurologists are a partner and they yes. become such an integral part of our circle yes. that unless we can be candid and direct and ask for what we need, we need to look elsewhere.
Yes.
I could talk to you forever and I'm going to ask you right now, will you come yeah. back?
Oh, I all day, Jen. You know how to reach me. We and y'all, you don't know me. You know, Jen had a script. We don't. You know, I think people find out the conversation is even better when you don't have a script. So me and Jen were just on here talking and having a great time. And you know me, Jen. I'll give you my heart. I'm able to be vulnerable and transparent. You are somebody I consider a friend. So anytime that you want me on, you let me know and. Hopefully somebody has been helped by what we have talked about.
I know they have been. And as we close, what message would you like to leave our listeners?
Okay. So let's keep it right. Let's keep it consistent with what we mentioned to them. We talked about hope very early on and how hope is free. Hope you don't have to sign your email onto something. Hope you don't have to give away your phone number, give a bank account down or spam. Hope is free. It's ability to be possessed by everybody. This is why I said hope, okay? Hope creates room for determination. If you have hope, then that means you are determined to find an answer. You are determined to overcome. Hope creates room for determination. So if you are determined, that means you have a positive attitude. Somebody with hope who is determined, they have a positive attitude and outlook on life. With a positive attitude, y'all, there's no limit to your altitude as a human being. So when you're looking for answers, when you're reading the books, 10 steps to being the best you can be, or 5 steps to being inspired, or for our purposes, yo, beating MS, I want to give you something for free. Yo, try hope. When I look at people who are in the most drastic of situations in our history, cancer patients, I mean, anybody, MS, whatever, people who've gone through some stuff and overcome, the one key ingredient that they all have is they've always had the hope that somehow, some way, things will get better. I'll learn. Hope creates room for determination. Determination makes room for a positive attitude. And with a positive attitude, there's no limit to your altitude, how high you can go in life with what you have, MS and all. And that's what I like to leave them with.
I can't think of a better way to close the program. And how can our listeners find you,
Tyler? Very simple. I'm at TC Speaks 32 on all platforms. If you type in TC Speaks on YouTube, you'll find all those free videos and you know all that stuff that's for free. And I am TylerCampbell.com is website. You can learn a little bit more about my story. And I'm excited, Jen. I got to get you a copy. I'll have my book published and finished when the holidays come. So I'll get your address. I gotta send you a book. So
I look forward to that and having you back on so we can discuss your book.
I have a radio show. I have a radio show every Saturday on 104.9 The Horn FM.
I listen to it.
And I know you listen, and it's
it's just a joy, you know, find a new approach to all dream, guys. No more football.
It's been gone. A joy having you. And yeah. We will also provide links to these sites in this episode's description. Tyler, thank you. It's been a joy.
Hey, it's a joy, Jen, and glad to call you a friend.
Likewise. Thank you to our listeners at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.